Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, all three of you, for joining us once more on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of Queensbury Rules, of course, and here's James Foley of Bad Left Hook. James.
Hello, Patrick.
I just completed more assists.
More assists
right there than Kobe has all season long, dude. That's the only basketball joke I could possibly make because I don't know shit about basketball. We're here for boxing.
Fuck basketball.
Well, I won't go that far, just in case. I don't want to. No, I'll alienate. Yeah, fuck basketball. I don't watch.
No, I actually love basketball. I like sports where you get the best playing against the best.
That's a good point. So why are we here talking about boxing? Thank you, Al Haymon. Fuck. So, Foley, you know, before we dive too deeply in the shit that's going to be happening this weekend, I want to get a little bit of wanking from you about this past weekend's Andy Fonfara card.
Your boy Andrew Fonfara?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good card. Not really, but it was, I got to just say, the highlight was definitely, you know, meeting a lot of the boys from Twitter and the Chicago area boxing fans. I went with Ben Lemon, who's a good guy, who we know from Twitter, and I ran into a couple of legends, Mickey Landsman, big supporter
nice.
Of the show, totally ultimate boy, and also saw Brian Fogg, Foggy Skies on
nice.
Twitter. So it was good to see some of the crew, but I have to admit, I probably, you know, had a wee bit too much to drink to really offer any kind of insight into the card, other than, you know, Fonfara kind of did what he had to do. I mean, he beat a guy he was should have beaten. The Kamita fight was actually when I was talking to Landsman, and I was kind of watching it with one eye, but just the fact that it went the distance and ended up being a split decision was pretty surprising. So I'd have to say his performance was probably a little bit disappointing. And then, you know, the Fortuna Cotto was just a total circus. So thankfully we got that for some comic relief. But overall, you know, weak card like we expected. Didn't look great on paper. Main event was fine. You know, I mean, it was fun and competitive, a little more competitive maybe than we had thought last week. But ultimately, you know, Fonfara was just his class showed. He was a better fighter, and you know, he got the win. So we move on from there and just kind of see what's next in the works for those new members of the Al Haymon Alliance.
Well, dude, you know, you brought up probably the, at least in my opinion, probably the coolest part about going to live fight cards, like, you know, when there's a bunch of other fans you know, or that you know from the internet, basically, these days.
Yeah.
That, you know, you wind up meeting. That's, I mean, at least for me, that's, you know, like 90% of the fun. I'm not going to lie. You know, the card that we went to the other day, the Nonito Donaire, Nick Walters, you know, Golovkin card and everything. It was, you know, the fighting was all fine. I didn't really have any problem with the card or anything. But, of course, every time you go and you meet, like, new people and you get to chill with new people, talk boxing, which I never get to do in the real world, like, ever. So, you know, that's like a big chunk of the fun anyway. So, yeah, I don't blame you for being a little too intoxicated to really, you know, score the fight with the sound off while watching live.
It ended up becoming one of the worst nights of my life. And I'm basically still paying the price for it. So at this point, the card itself is kind of a blur, although I did record it.
Well, you got to elaborate now, dude.
Oh, dude, I'm lucky to be alive right now. I'm probably
like,
not going to be. I'm going to Atlantic City for the Hopkins fight, and I mean, there's a chance I seriously may not drink on Saturday night. It just got way out of control.
it fucked you up a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was roughed up, dude. I was hammered when I ran into like Landsman and those guys, and that was during the Kamita fight. And I stayed out for quite a few hours after the fight card. So, man, it was one of those ugly nights that kind of went you know, perfect with that the main event featuring Dudu Ndumbo and our boy Andrew.
Well, I won't press you for details, but I've been there. Believe me, I've embarrassed myself well beyond at a few fight cards. But as far as the Fonfara fight,
I'm just going to issue, I just issue my apologies and just try to move forward with my life.
Well, hopefully nobody got too many pictures because there's no moving forward from that. But you know what happens in Chicago at a Polish fight card stays in Chicago at a Polish fight card. So, you know, I actually thought that the card was a little bit better than most of us thought it was going to be going in. I mean, we dismissed it pretty hard. I mean, it was not quality, but it was a lot more entertaining than I thought it was going to be. Fonfara looked okay. I think that it kind of was, he seems to be one of those guys that fights up to the level of his competition when he's in bigger fights sometimes. But then when he's in against guys like Dudu and Ngumbu, there's really, I don't know if there's motivation or not, but it doesn't really seem to be a whole lot of motivation because, I don't know, he just didn't really fight that inspired. And maybe it was a case of Ngumbu being kind of awkward and, you know, it's kind of difficult to really get him to settle down and whatnot. But still, I felt like being in a headliner, like being in that main event slot, I thought that there was a little bit more pressure on him to, you know, really excel in his performance than he showed. I mean, maybe I'm being a little too hard on him, but, you know, this was Showtime main event status here. We need a little bit more, I think. But
well, I think,
I don't know. Am I being too hard on our boy?
No, I mean, I think you're right that I think he, well, he's Fonfara definitely has his limitations, you know. I thought that, you know, Ngumbu, for his part, definitely showed up to win. It didn't seem like he was trying to get a paycheck. And I think Fonfara needed to lose, you know, the first couple rounds or at least have it be kind of competitive. And he took some decent punches in order for him to kind of snap out of it and take over the fight. And that's been maybe a pattern in Fonfara's career recently. You know, he's had some good outings. I thought maybe his best performances probably just being able to come back and hang in there and get the knockdown against Adonis Stevenson. But his fight with Glenn Johnson, you know, I thought he boxed really well, and that was kind of his biggest fight to date at that point. And I thought he kind of rose to the moment. But, you know, against Gabe Campillo, he looked pretty bad early in that fight. And against Carpency, he looked just lost out there for a few rounds. So, I mean, I think I just think Fonfara is kind of, he has a lot of heart. And I think he has decent punching power, but I also think he's technically, you know, not a great fighter. And his limitations show when he gets against more kind of, you know, craftier, tricky opponents. And in some ways, Ngumbu fit that role with how he was fighting earlier. I mean, I had never seen him before, but, he wasn't the total scrub as advertised.
He did have some ability.
It is what he is, you know?
Yeah. That's fair, too, because, you know, a lot of us, even just based on the name, dude, because we're all a bunch of fucking four-year-olds, but, you know, even just based on the name, we pretty much just dismissed the guy flat out. And it wasn't like he came in doing absolutely nothing. You know, he actually presented kind of a difficult target early on, so I have to at least give him credit there. You know, Fonfara did have to adjust a little bit, and he did. Zero head movement, but he did. So, yeah, I give him credit for the win anyway, but you know, I think that also a chunk of what, or at least what we brought up last week too, a chunk of what we were kind of, you know, interested about on the card was Tomoki Kameda, which you touched on a minute ago, which was that it wasn't overly impressive for his, I think it was his second stateside outing. What did you get the feeling? Well, you got the drunk feeling, but the feeling of the crowd when he was fighting, what did you think?
Well, the crowd was really into his walkout. I mean, I don't think it compared to, you know, it was definitely a huge Fonfara crowd, you know. So I didn't think that really anything stood out as far as any of the other fighters having a particularly loud contingent. But Kameda did have a kind of a cool entrance. But it you know, it seemed pretty subdued. I actually thought it was kind of a lighter turnout than what I was expecting. And I'm not sure, you know, if that's a promotional thing, because I know Fanfara, he was being promoted by these two guys, and then they kind of split up, and then now he's just being promoted by one of those guys. And, of course, you know, he signed with Al Heyman and he had kind of the Showtime backing, and maybe that meant, like, less promoting on the ground or something like that. But the fights that really stood out to me was, you know, when he fought Glenn Johnson, I think he had a great crowd at that same venue, and maybe, like, 4,000 or 5,000 people. And then he also drew a really good crowd at the U.S. Cellular event, which was, you know, heavily, heavily advertised. And that drew, I think, somewhere like from 8,500 to 10,000. You know, I saw a couple different numbers. But this fight really looked like maybe 2,000, 3,000 people, maybe. And, you know, it's kind of surprising because I think Fanfara is clearly a draw among the Chicago Polish fans. And he was coming off of a pretty good performance against Stevenson that kind of legitimized him as more than just, you know, cannon fodder. I mean, he's, you know, a legitimate light heavyweight contender. But this was actually called the homecoming. So they were playing up that angle too. You know, let's give him a hero's welcome. And it did seem like kind of a light turnout, and maybe that's because of the opponent or because of promoting or whatever. But that's my takeaway on that. But Kamita specifically, I didn't really see the crowd getting into you know, Kamita that much.
Well, I mean, I'd have to think that at least you mentioned, you know, on the ground promoting and marketing. I'd have to think that, you know, most of the butts that filled the seats there were probably there for Fanfara, no matter, you know, what type of signing they did for the Kamita brothers. That was more of a, you know, like, yeah, we're a bunch of rec purists and we care about that, but not a whole lot of other people do. But, you know, I mean, I at least thought it was a decent, you know, offering. However, it actually played out, you know, not very entertaining, unfortunately. I didn't think it was bad. It just was, it was repetitive. It got repetitive after about, you know, halfway through. It was like, all right, Kameda's basically, you know, dominating as far as his activity, and he's sharper and all this type of stuff, but he's not really doing anything past, you know, just kind of moving forward and chopping away. So it got a little bit repetitive, and I think that people just kind of zoned out, or at least that's the feeling I got, especially following along, you know, on Twitter.
Yeah, it wasn't very lively. I mean, I think, you know, like the hardcore boxing fans, especially a city like this where we don't get that many fights, you know, it was a good offering, as sad as that is, because they were mostly mismatches. But just, like, you know, the names alone, I mean, I was curious to see Kamita. I was still interested in seeing Javier Fortuna. I thought that could, you know, potentially have been a decent fight. So, we were getting some talented fighters and some interesting guys, but that's not really what moves, you know, great ticket sales, I don't think. Because ultimately, you know, you still had fights where that we were, you know, 10-1, 15-1 favorites. And it's just, yeah, I didn't read anything, hear any advertisements on the radio, anything like that, going into this,
you know,
other
I mean,
than us just crapping on it on Twitter all the time.
Well, I have to think, and I mean, this is me kind of trying to use my brain a little bit here. It might not work very well, but I feel like maybe with the performance against Stevenson and then trying to kind of just like tap into that ethnic market in Chicago that seemed to support, you know, Tomas Adamek a lot and, you know, Spielka, and, you know, when other Polish fighters fought in Chicago, there seemed to be a gathering. So I kind of felt like they saw the performance against Stevenson and they're like, all right, well, you know, maybe he's a little bit better than the opponent role that the Heyman, you know, organization seems to be signing recently. Maybe he's better than that. And maybe we can capitalize on this ethnic thing. And I think that, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, again, I'm being too harsh, but I think that if the turnout was really like a few thousand and the performance itself wasn't scintillating, maybe they could be rethinking that if that was the aim in the first place, because it just wasn't, yeah, it was just kind of nondescript, unfortunately. You know, and as funny as Steven Espinoza is, I didn't really see any actual response from him this weekend when people were, you know, they're always giving him shit. And usually he has an honest response back that you kind of like think, oh, well, maybe he does know something we don't, and maybe we are being stupid, but I didn't really see much of a response from him, like when people were, you know, ragging on this card this weekend. So I don't know.
This right here says this here said that the attendance was almost 4,000 people. So it's getting
almost
into a little
so it was like 3,100. This was like 3,100.
Yeah. rounded up to four.
Yeah.
Oh, Heyman is the best advisor in boxing. Quote that Andrew Fonfara.
Boom.
All right, so
there
I don't know. He's talking about trying to get a rematch with Stevenson. So, who knows?
Well, I mean, real quick before we move on, if you don't mind, hopefully you were at least somewhat sober enough to remember the fucking Fortuna Cotto fight. I mean,
oh, of course.
That was almost that was so crazy. It was like kind of like the saving grace of the card, really.
That was why I love boxing. You know, I mean, it was just complete total farce. But yeah, Cotto going down from the like, you know, punch after the bell that so obviously completely whiffed was just hilarious. And you can't beat that.
You know, I'm no lie. I watched it on a stream, and I do have a legit reason for doing that, though. In my case, it's not even really all that illegal or whatever, because with the cable company that we go through here in TJ, they don't offer Showtime. It's just HBO, and every so often HBO will actually show Showtime's programming on HBO. It's weird, dude, but regardless, they didn't show the fights. So I streamed it, and so, you know, it was actually a really good stream and everything, but it was just crazy because I was sitting there watching it going like, did that just really fucking happen? Like, is my stream choppy, and did I miss the punch? I thought that he, you know, the way he went down, I was like,
funny,
did that shit really hit him? Like, and then they showed the replay, and I was like, oh, bro, come on. That should be like an immediate disqualification, man.
Well, when it happened live, it was hard to tell whether it landed or not. And it was so obviously blatantly, you know, after the bell that I had thought, like, wow, like Fortuna might get disqualified, you know? I mean, you could tell
totally.
There was like a delayed reaction that he kind of like was hamming it up with when he fell down, but I still thought maybe it landed, you know, somewhere. And then they showed the replay on like the big screen, and the entire crowd was just going, you know, going nuts. And it was pretty, I mean, pretty funny, pretty awesome. You know, Javier Fortuna is frustrating because a couple years ago, I mean, he did look great in a couple fights, and then just had, you know, one or two kind of stinkers. Murray fought that guy Patrick Hyland, who was promoted by
CBS
on like one of the Pacquiao undercards, and that guy, you know, he went the distance with him, and then there was that Luis Franco fight.
Yeah,
and then he had a fight on ESPN that was just a horrible, horrible fight. And his stock has really dropped, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, he's still undefeated. He's got some talent, you know, and I think he's a good puncher, if not, you know, a really good puncher in that division. So I'd be interested to see him, you know, get in the mix with some of the other opponents, like, you know, a guy like Gary Russell trying to come back from the Lomachenko loss or something like that. I mean, there's some good fights, I think, at 126, 130 that Fortuna could be involved in. So, you know, I'm not totally writing him off. And for Cotto, I mean, of course, the lingering memory is just going to be that move that he pulled at the end of the round, which, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
props to him for that.
Like you said, I mean, the fact that he punches hard, and I'm not going to try to, like, downplay his punches. He's obviously a good puncher, but the fact that he punches hard kind of buys him a little bit of, you know, charity and makes us want to see him a little bit more and everything. But I actually thought that the ending, too, obviously that punch landed, but it didn't really look super hard, and the way that Cotto went down looked almost identical to how he went down from the punch that didn't land. So at that point, I don't know what the hell was going on. I mean, it looked just, the entire thing was like farcical, but I was halfway between I was halfway between being like incredulous and like pissed off and like laughing my ass off, because I was like, dude, this is so fucking crazy. It's hilarious. But I cannot imagine someone who's like maybe thinking about maybe being a boxing fan watching this and going like, nah. I think I'll stay away. I'm good. It was just like shameful. It was so fucking bad. So bad, good. Yeah. It was crazy. But, you know, at the very least, we got, I guess, a knockout it or whatever. I don't know. But, you know, I do kind of worry about Fortuna going forward a little bit because, like you said, he's kind of steadily looked less and less impressive, including the other night. I mean, when he wasn't, you know, I don't know, pulling some shit, he didn't really look that good. He wound up kind of bailing himself out with his power, which seems to be what he might have to rely on in the future. So, anyway.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's a tough one. I mean, I think he was getting the better of it with Cotto every time they would actually exchange, but there was just so much ugly stuff, like folding, and Cotto was hitting the low blows, and then that weird, like, knockdown back of the head, and the referee, like, seemed to rule it a knockdown and deduct a point. Which, you know, I still don't know what's really happening there, but you know what I mean? It was like we couldn't tell. Like
that ref was clueless.
It seemed like an obviously like it was like it shouldn't have been ruled a knockdown, but he gave him a 10 count and then he deducted a point. So I don't know.
It made no sense what he was doing, but you know, whatever. He was clearly inexperienced or having some type of existential crisis in the middle of the fight. So we'll move along from that, but. You said you are going this weekend. You're going to Hopkins Kovalev.
Yes, sir.
That shit's going to be boss, dude. There's going to be a lot of people there.
I know, man. Yeah, it's a solid lineup. I'm actually sitting with your boy, James Begg Jr.
Fucking really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even think I've ever seen. I don't know what the fuck that guy looks like. At this point, I think he is Ray Pop. But I mean,
No one does. If I disappear this weekend, just tell the police to look into the James Bagg Jr. Twitter account. Whoever is responsible for that is probably. No, he is a real person, and he will be making his grand kind of debut in the public eye. On Saturday.
Damn, dude. He's fucking stepping out.
It's a powerful lineup, dude. I mean, all the usual guys who cover the fights, you know, your boy Starks and Greisman, Raskin, Brian Campbell, all those dudes. I think Mulvaney will be in the house, maybe a little Woodsy. But, yeah, all the press row dudes and, you know, tons of boxing fans, too, guys we know from Twitter. So, yeah, it sounds like it's going to be an awesome, crazy crowd.
Damn, dude, hopefully our boy Bag doesn't wind up having to answer for any of this shit that he says on Twitter.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
You know, and I know that shit's all in fun, so I don't really, you know, when people do stuff like that, I'm not going to take it seriously. At least I'm not going to. But I know some people do. So hopefully none of that shit goes down.
Well, I don't know, man. I've heard Bagg Jr. may be kind of a badass in person, so you confront him at your own risk.
I'm not confronting shit, dude. He'll fucking ruin my reputation on the internet. I've spent years building myself up, James. Years.
Oh, I know.
I paid for so many followers along the way. You know, my fucking buddies died face down in the muck, all right?
Yeah, man. I mean, we'll see how it all plays out. I don't think anyone's going to be there that's like angry at, you know, unless Bag and I run into Dan Rayfield, like he may have some issues with some of the stuff Bag's done, but I don't really anticipate that happening. So it'll be fun, dude. I'm killing myself for just getting so out of hand this weekend, because it's like I've not had a hangover like that since I was maybe like a teenager.
Oh, you know, dude, I hate
like,
that
what,
shit.
What am I doing? Now I'm in my fucking 30s. I can't recover from that shit so quickly. Like, my mindset right
I know,
now is
dude.
Like, man, I can't even envision myself drinking any time in the near future. So, I'm sure by Saturday,
I hate that shit.
I'll be drunk dialing you at 4 in the morning after the Hopkins Kovalev fight. So, I'm sure by then I'll be recovered. But right now, it's just, man, the outlook is grim. So, I'm at that state where I'm, like, not looking for it. I'm just like, fuck, why can't I just be laying in bed, fucking eating soup, watching the Hopkins Kovalev fight on Saturday. Why do I have to go hang out with all these assholes?
A couple beers in, you'll be all right. But I fucking see somebody drinking a 40 these days, and I shit myself drunk. I mean, I know what you're saying, dude. I get like a 6-pack, and I'm just like, whoa, there, dude. You're 3 beers in. You need to chill.
That's funny. I'm just, yeah, we're like the same age. I mean, I'm hitting that age where you just start to realize, like, wow, like, my body doesn't just, like, automatically recover from anything I do. There are consequences to my actions.
Yeah, no shit, and we feel that shit the next day for sure. It's tough to shake off. So let that be a lesson to all you youngsters who are listening to the show, because we know we have a real young fan base, fucking Ray Pop status, but, you know, just remember that.
I don't think Bella Thorne listens to our show.
I'm holding out, dude. I think there's a possibility. I'm holding out, but I'm not going to push the issue, because I've seen what happens when people push that issue. So speaking of fucking pushing issues, Hopkins is pushing 131 years old. I don't know if you heard about that.
I've heard his age mentioned as an issue, potential issue in this fight.
So what's your overall feeling here? I mean, what's going to go down here, man? Are we going to witness a changing of the guard, kind of? Or are we going to be,
I think so.
You know, are we going to be in the midst of the dawning of the age of Kovalev?
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, I'm not really caught up in the Hopkins mystique, you know, and thinking that I think Kovalev is going to be too much for him. I mean, I have pretty much since the fight was made. I think I would have picked Adonis Stevenson over Hopkins too. I just think Kovalev is just going to be, you know, too much to handle for Bernard. And age is a factor. I mean, he has slowed down. There's no question about it. And I still think Hopkins is capable of being a handful for a lot of fighters, but I just don't see Kovalev kind of falling for that mental game. I think he's too active of a puncher, and he's just going to, you know, press a pace that Bernard is not going to be able to handle. And Hopkins, you know, is going to try to hold and do the things that he does, and we'll see. But, I mean, I really – this is just my opinion, you know, and my prediction. I mean, I think Kovalev is – basically going to blow him out of there, and it's either going to be some kind of just brutal knockout, or, you know, a sustained amount of punches, or Hopkins is going to end up kind of doing something, you know, goofy that stops the fight before that happens. But I don't see Hopkins really having any kind of success against Kovalev. You know, I just think that this time he's really bitten off more than he can chew, and you know, obviously, if I'm wrong, you know, I wouldn't be, you know, horribly surprised, but I think it's that's going to speak that, you know, to me, this is more of a referendum on Kovalev. Like, how good really is he? And I'm buying it. You know, I think he's like legitimately a huge puncher and an awesome offensive fighter and a force that is not going to be, you know, submitted by kind of a wily 49-year-old, you know, clinch artist guy who throws one punch at a time like Bernard Hopkins. I really think Kovalev's I think he's that good. But I think that's what this fight's going to tell us. I think it's more about, you know, how good really is Kovalev, as opposed to, you know, can Bernard summon up? I mean, we know Bernard can beat guys like Shumanov and Tavoris Cloud, you know, all day, even at this age. And he was even able to beat a really good fighter like Jean Pascal. So I just think Kovalev's on another level. And I think that's what we're going to find out on Saturday.
And, you know, I'll honestly try to keep my Hopkins and my anti-Hopkins bias, you know, out of this, because, you know, trying to be at least somewhat objective here, I think that if you're kind of measuring not knowing whether or not Kovalev is 100% for real, kind of like Golovkin. I know that it's super easy to compare them because they both have V's in their last names and shit, and it sounds Soviet, but, you know, like, I think they are kind of in a similar spot where they've looked very dominant, they've looked very scary, et cetera, but it's really, you know, there's still kind of a little bit of doubt there as far as, you know, how durable are they, how, you know, how are they going to do on a lengthy fight, et cetera. But if you kind of flip the script and look at Hopkins' recent resume, I think that it's pretty easy to get caught up in the fact that there's some names there, but the names just aren't really that good. I mean, for example, you know, Beboot Shumanov, he's first of all, somewhat inexperienced, not on the amateur level, but as a professional, you know, he's not a super hard puncher. He's slow. He's plodding. He was basically walking right into whatever Hopkins wanted him to walk into all night long and didn't adjust. You know, Karo Murad was a – what's that?
I was going to say he's a disgrace to men with V's in their last name.
Seriously, dude. I mean, can't we at least get some Better Beav? Like,
let's do something here.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Better Beav because it's Better Beav.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's going to be a real player, in the division.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to be big with the ladies. But, you know, Carl Murat, you know, he was kind of an unknown guy to most people. I didn't really know. I'd look up fucking everything, and I didn't know who the hell he was either. He wound up being kind of wily, but, like, that was it. And Hopkins had all sorts of trouble with him, you know, basically got helped out by Steve Smoger. You know, anyway, I'm not going to go down the list, but I think it's easy to look at Hopkins' recent resume and go, oh, man, Tavoris Cloud, shit, he won a title, blah, blah, blah. I mean, dude, this wasn't a fucking title. It was a belt, and it was Tavoris Cloud. You know, so, you know, when you actually start looking at this stuff, it's easy to get a little bit overly excited about the whole age thing and blah, blah, blah. And like you said, he's very inactive inside the ring. He's very accurate, but if, you know, a fighter will essentially just not let him pull his shit, I think that they have a very good chance of winning. And Kovalev doesn't seem like the type of dude that's just going to stand there while Hopkins does the, you know, the actual pelvic thrusting and, you know, foul faking and shit. So hopefully Hopkins isn't still following me or listening to the show, because that was a kind of awkward moment yesterday when I was like talking shit and then he like followed me. I'm like, oh fuck. Okay.
Wait, who did?
Anyway, Bernard Hopkins.
Who followed you? Oh, did
Bernard
he?
Hopkins. Well, I think he probably unfollowed me by now, but I posted a link to the show. And, like, for the little funny picture on the show, I used, like, a mummy. And so he, like, followed me right after I did that. And I'm like, oh, fuck, dude. Is this about to get real weird? I thought that shit was about to turn, like, you know, out of BZ status real quick.
I could see that not Hopkins not even really, like, looking at his run in his own fucking Twitter. I mean, how, you know, come on. Dude,
probably not. Yeah, good point.
If I'm 50 and I'm still on Twitter, man, just shoot me. Seriously.
He probably calls that shit newfangled, you know, on a regular basis. But, I mean, so what do you think about, like, whether or not Kovalev is going to allow Hopkins' antics, basically?
I just don't think he's going to at all. You know, I think he's going to be throwing a lot of combinations, and I think he's proving that he has, you know, significant power. And I don't think he's going to fall for any of that stuff. And I think this is just going to be about one guy just physically and the speed of his punches and the, you know, the volume is going to just be too much for Hopkins to, you know, to do. I mean, Hopkins, we've seen that he does that. He basically negates his opponent's offense, you know, and he finds ways to make his opponents not throw as many punches and kind of get lulled into those traps where he can catch them with the one punch at a time. And, you know, maybe he will do some of that with Kovalev and land some clean right hands, but I just don't see Hopkins. I mean, I really just see Kovalev is this total destroyer with, you know, like tons of firepower, and I don't think anything Hopkins can land on Kovalev will hurt Kovalev. So I just don't know how he's going to be able to keep him off for 12 rounds to even come close to winning a decision. And I don't think there's any way he knocks him out. So I think the only way Hopkins wins is if Kovalev does exactly what, you know, some other opponents have done in the past. He completely changes his identity as a fighter when he gets in the ring with him for some reason. And doesn't throw as many punches or does something stupid. And, yeah, I mean, it's Hopkins. Of course, I could see it happening just because it would be funny. But, can't you see it? You know, Kovalev comes out and all of a sudden he's, like, got, like, his guard up and he's trying to be a counterpuncher. Some shit like that. So if something like that happens, like, yeah, maybe then I, you know, that's the way I could see, like, oh, man, Bernard's going to fucking pull this off because his opponent just played right into his hands. But, you know,
yeah,
I just look at Kovalev, and I don't see him doing that. You know, I see him, like, sticking to his plan. I think he has to show Hopkins the same lack of respect he showed, you know, Nathan Cleverley and every other opponent. And he has to just believe he's younger, stronger, better puncher, and, you know, he can just walk right through him and mow him down. And I think that's what he has to – I mean, he has to believe that, you know. So,
yeah, I agree.
It's a lot of intrigue, I mean, to see what can happen, because I know I'm kind of probably in the minority just in being so extreme in favor of Kovalev. I mean, because it's basically a 50-50 type of fight. So it's great to have something like this high profile, you know, on the schedule.
And You know, that kind of brings up a little bit of a little side adventure. I don't know if you saw it, but, you know, it's been posted. It was on HBO, obviously, but it's also been posted on Twitter a number of times by a bunch of people lately. But the, I think it was 2 days or whatever it was for Kovalev Caporello, when they basically did the little kind of feature about Main Events and the Duva family and stuff like that. Did you wind up seeing that?
I think I saw some of it.
Well, in any event, it was...
I saw something. Why?
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because it was kind of showing... Number one, it was showing the... basically the moment at which Kathy Duva and the rest of the ladies who help run that company, basically Main Events, found out that Kovalev Hopkins was signed if Kovalev beat Caporello. And,
I saw that one.
Yeah, and so... In any event, I brought it up because I was going to say, regardless of whether Kovalev really wows anybody this weekend, and I think that there's a pretty good, you know, chance that he will, but regardless of whether he does or not, I think that it's kind of, I don't want to say like admirable, like I'm like patronizing, but it's cool the way that Main Events has managed to bring Kovalev along and also managed to really help him get his name out, because, I mean, Golovkin seemed to be a guy that just kind of had the backing of HBO because he was destroying dudes. And when you read about what Kovalev, you know, how he kind of came along, it's a little bit different. And it's kind of like, you know, HBO and, you know, other larger entities needed some convincing about him, because for whatever reason, he was getting turned down by other promoters and Main Events took him on, promised him they'd get him to a title and got him to one. And so, you know, from there, the whole, you know, punching the little tiny punching bag on HBO and attending this fight and that fight, you know, stuff like that. It was just kind of a little bit different way to market a guy and a little bit of a different way to get a name out there rather than just the regular relying on HBO, you know, 90-second commercials narrated by fucking, what's his name, you know,
Leif Schreiber.
I can't believe him. Yeah, Leif Schreiber. I want that motherfucker's job. That's the only reason why I'm mad at him. But in any event, you know, they took a little bit more, you know, guerrilla style marketing approach with him, and I thought that that was pretty cool. You know,
a real grassroots approach.
Yeah, there you go. Grassroots.
You know, he showed up on the NBC Sports series when that first started their deal with Main Events, and the first fight was, I think, with Gabriel Campillo. And, you know, it was kind of eye-opening.
I think Cornelius White and all that shit,
Yeah. And, you know, so it's like the Campillo fight. Campillo is a really good fighter in the division. But I think at the time some of the thinking was, well, Campillo, he's old. You know, he almost got knocked out by Divorce Cloud, and he came back and probably should have won that fight. And then, you know, eventually got knocked out by Fanfara. So, you know, there's some question, I guess, about Kovalev still hasn't really fought an elite opponent. And, but, you know, in boxing these days, I mean, how many elite opponents are there?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there might be one guy at 170. You know, Hopkins is elite, but a lot of that's because of his history. I mean, he's still almost 50, and in recent years, his only notable wins are over Jean Pascal, and both those fights were pretty close. And the second fight, I mean, there was a huge desire on everybody's part to see Hopkins break the all-time record. So I think that was kind of like a foregone conclusion, because that was actually a pretty close fight. And, you know, you can't forget, too, he got dropped by Pascal, and he got caught with some big punches and looked like he was a little hurt by Pascal a couple times. So,
yeah.
And other than that, you know, lost to Chad Dawson. We've kind of seen where Dawson's career has gone. You know, and then his wins are over these guys who are kind of, you know, really tailor-made and clearly a level below, you know, I think Kovalev. So it's hard to say, like, kind of where these guys are at. Most people might contend, you know, but outside of those two, and Adonis Stevenson, there probably are no, you know, elite fighters at 175. So, you know, this is huge, I guess. I mean, it's a big proving ground. It'll be interesting to see the reactions to the fight either way. Because, you know, with Boxer, we're always such naysayers, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, next week, or you'll be like, well, Hopkins was 50 years old, come on, like, you know, his best days was like 10 years ago. And that's probably true. I mean, I know the win over Kelly Pavlik was huge, but there's no question. I mean, Hopkins is true prime, which started late anyway when he was probably early 30s, mid-30s. But you're talking late 90s to maybe mid-2000s, you know, or late 2000s. And, I mean, there's no question that he's, you know, to lose to Chad Dawson the way that he did, where he basically just didn't show up that fight. It wasn't like anything Dawson really did. It was just Hopkins was more, you know, he was just content to just kind of, like, be a spoiler and not get hit at all. But he offered nothing, you know, no type of offense of his own. I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
It's a really interesting fight, man. And but it will be curious to see, like, you know, no matter what the result, what will kind of the response of to the loser be? Because it's an interesting dynamic for a big fight like this, in that one fighter has such a huge built-in excuse for why, you know, this isn't two guys meeting in their absolute prime. And it's a testament to, like, how, boxing, this is the most anticipated fight. I mean, one of the guys is 49. And like I said, I mean, yeah, beat Pascal a couple years ago. Those are good wins. Hopkins' last really great, you know, great win. I mean, going back to Kelly Pavlik, maybe. So, you know, it's like these guys aren't in their prime. This is just respect for, like, a genuine legend, Hall of Famer, and a guy who's been a great fighter for, you know, 20 years. And then a young up-and-coming guy who's pretty totally unproven. But, you know, clearly in Kovalev's prime, but one fighter just has this thing. I mean, no matter what Hopkins does, he has nothing to lose here. We'll give him tons of credit just for taking the fight. You know, so if Hopkins loses in a brutal fashion, so much of that can be written off to that, like, well, it had to end eventually because the guy's almost 50 years old.
Well, and, you know, I do have to say, though, that the kind of the prevailing opinion, it's kind of really tough to, you know, put my finger on it or, you know, grasp really what everybody's saying, but it seems the consensus is that Kovalev should win, that, you know, he possesses the physical tools to win. He punches hard enough. He's younger, et cetera, et cetera. So Kovalev should win, but there's always, like, with every fucking Hopkins fight, whether it's the fouling or clean stuff or not, there's always this, like, kind of undercurrent, this suspicion, this, you know, little backdrop of, can the guy do it, though? Because Hopkins is that good, that tricky, that cunning, that dickish, whatever you want to call it, that he totally could pull it off, and a lot of us would not be that surprised. So that's kind of, you mentioned it earlier, it's about a 50-50 fight, and it's really nice to go into that, and I mean, speaking of Espinoza, he was talking shit about the other day. A tweet got, you know, retweeted over and over again on my timeline. He said something along the lines of HBO has guys in their main events that are losing to, you know, guys on the undercards or, you know, whatever, you know, while Showtime, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, this card coming up this weekend, Hopkins Kovalev and also, you know, Saddam Ali Abregu, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a minute. It's really tough to talk shit about this card. You know, it might be easy in hindsight. It might wind up sucking. But going in on paper, I think a lot of us are really looking forward to it.
It's a great fight for sure. But, you know, let's not tickle boxing's balls too much here, okay? I mean, it's one good fight. You know, I mean, like, the past you can think of years where there was 15 or 20 events with, like, this kind of caliber. VR Showtime. So, you know, ultimately here, it's like we have, like, the number two and the number three guy at 175. Fighting each other. One of them's 49 years old. You know, I mean, it's awesome, but let's see what happens. You know, let's see what happens.
I'm just saying I like tickling balls, okay? So just let me tickle the balls a little bit. Let me mind the
I do. I mean, this is a good fight, and I'm not trying to, like, crap on it. It is really a good fight, and, you know, that's why I'm going to it. I mean, I bought a ticket to it. You know, I'm looking forward to it, and I love Kovalev. And I've liked Bernard Hopkins. I have a ton of respect for him just because he finds a way to win, you know, and there's something interesting about that. Even if you hate his style, the fact that he can make so many good and, you know, sometimes very good fighters just completely lay an egg, you know, on psychology. I mean, it's a huge testament. And I love the fact that, you know, so many of his fights are so close to call, you know, and he always kind of manages to leave some doubt. You know, he hasn't really been clearly beaten. I mean, aside from, you know, maybe the Chad Dawson fight, which, again, was a pretty dreadful fight, so it's nothing to really hang your hat on that you won that type of a, you know, fight over a 48-year-old Bernard Hopkins. The Roy Jones fight really early in his career, clear win for Roy Jones, but even then Hopkins negated Jones, you know, a lot of what Jones was doing. So, I mean, he's always been this really interesting fighter who had, you know, the ability to kind of, like, you know, bring down his opponent's performance, which is, I think, a fascinating thing. So, I mean, I do love that part of it, but I just, like, man, I can't believe that Hopkins still has anything left in the tank to compete on this really elite kind of a level, which I believe that Kovalev is at. So I'll probably be honest, man, if Hopkins beats Kovalev, I think a big part of me is going to feel like I just grossly overrated Kovalev. I'll give Hopkins a ton of credit for taking the fight and for, you know, because he saw something that, you know, I didn't and most of us didn't. But I think if Kovalev is who we think he is and he's, you know, an elite guy with that type of power, I just don't see how Hopkins hangs in there at all. You know, I can't see it. I'd really be surprised if this even goes, you know, that many rounds, because I just think Hopkins is going to kind of realize that he's kind of on the losing end and bit off more than he can chew, and he's not going to put himself through, you know, that type of punishment. But I don't know,
so
maybe I'm crazy.
Is that your final prediction then, that you're going to go Kovalev stoppage?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've said the same thing five times over again, but yeah, I mean,
just making sure
that's my prediction.
I don't know,
Kovalev impresses
stone,
me
dude.
More
this
than,
boxing.
Like, more... Well, Kovalev impresses me more than Pavlik ever did.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, that's like kind of an analogy that keeps getting brought up. And look, the Pavlik win was good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say that wasn't a good win. But it was above Pavlik's normal weight, and I mean, that could have been good for him in a few ways. However, at that point, he was basically fighting a light heavyweight when he was, you know, the middleweight champion. However, it was a good win. But as far as comparing Pavlik to Kovalev, I don't really think there's a real great comparison. I think that Kovalev's a little less mechanical, you know, hits harder overall, probably. I mean, I guess we'll see. But in any event, yeah, I agree with you there that it's not a super great, you know, comparison. But I think that maybe this is just kind of like me hoping I'm wrong, and that's why I'm making this prediction. But I'm actually predicting Hopkins is going to take, like, a controversial decision.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, cool. Dude, I can't. I'm having issues picking against Bernard Hopkins these days. I'm thinking that he's some type of actual alien or a witch doctor, serial killer. I don't know, but it's disturbing me.
I'll be happy to see any result. I mean, if I'm totally completely wrong and Kovalev just, like, does what, you know, gets even if, because in my mind, even if it's like a draw type of fight or it could have gone either way, fuck it, I'll score it for Hopkins. Kovalev should not be in that type of fight with this guy, you know? So, I mean, if Hopkins can even make it that kind of a fight and get a split decision, great. Like, good for him. I think it'll be awesome to see that. I mean, I do consider Hopkins like an all-time great. And one of the best of you know, in what era is he even in?
Totally.
But he's one of the best fighters of the last, like, 25 years, you know? So there's no question. I mean, it'd be awesome to see him get a win in this circumstance. And I think, you know, we'll have to give him a ton of credit for it. A lot of how that's going to be viewed is going to depend on, you know, if Kovalev loses, what does he do from there? If, you know, if Kovalev bounces back and, you know, shows that he still, you know, can be a great fighter, then that win gets bigger and bigger, you know, as the years go by. But, you know, I don't see it happening. But man, you're getting me hyped up, dude. I'm ready for ringside.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a close fight, and there's a lot of different things that could happen that I wouldn't be that surprised by. And, you know, I also haven't really brought up the idea that, and I've said this for like years now, that if Kovalev really does get Hopkins in trouble but doesn't straight up like put him out, I think there's a really good chance we could just see Hopkins just DQ himself. I mean, he just seems like the type of dude that he's not going to let himself like go out like that if he can help it. You know, he's going to like, he'll do anything. He'll do biting, whatever, scratching, mauling, picking up and slamming. I don't think that any of that shit is above him at all. So that's another possibility that I think could happen. I'd just be like, yeah, well, I totally saw that coming. So in any event, it's an interesting fight, but I mean, you know, I'm going to be watching intently.
So if Kovalev blasts him away, or if Hopkins wins a split decision, controversial decision, or if Hopkins DQs himself, we pretty much nailed it.
Yeah, dude, we can do, there's a couple other, you know, there's a draw. I wouldn't be surprised by a draw.
Draw.
You know, I'm going like string theory here. I don't care. There's every possibility, and every possible universe. Yeah, it's a cool fight actually, though. I think going in, cause there's a lot of different, you know, there's a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous. So.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm so curious like what it's going to look like. I think we'll know very early on how this fight's going to be. I mean, I think that if Kovalev comes out and it's kind of like, I'd say give it like two rounds. But if there's two rounds that are kind of like feeling out type of rounds, then I think, you know, that's a huge advantage for Bernard Hopkins. You know, and so if the fight starts like that, then I think that people who picked Hopkins are going to, you know, be pretty confident and comfortable. I think because I think Kovalev needs to come right out of the bat. Because how many times have you heard that where guys are kind of turned in those, you know, these big knockout punches, and then they kind of freeze against like a good boxer, and then they say, well, I wanted to take a few rounds to figure out their style. It's like, no, you don't need to do that. You know, you just have to stay true to who you are, go out there, and you know, blast this guy. I think that's Kovalev's best shot. You know, to just force Hopkins on his back foot and just take the action, take it right to him from the first round.
Yeah.
And you know, look,
I totally agree.
I think if he hurts Hopkins early or even, you know, lands some significant punches, I think the writing's on the wall that he's going to end up getting rid of him. You know, but I think if Hopkins, if we're getting like some early kind of feeling out rounds and it's getting into the third, fourth, fifth round, you've had a couple close rounds and not much has happened, you know, because of sentimentality alone. I mean, he lands one clean right hand and, you know, nothing happens and you're just like, Barrett, that's Hopkins' round.
Yeah. I think that, it's a lot of it's going to be kind of hinging on whether or not Kovalev stops to think. Because if he stops to think too much, that's just going to be Hopkins' fight. You know, he needs to, like, actually bank rounds early and shit if he have a chance at winning. But, you know, if Hopkins starts pulling that thing and gets him to think, you know, we could be in for a fight. But that's basically what I'm hoping won't happen. I've said it numerous times. I'm sick of watching Bernard Hopkins at this point. So I'm hoping Kovalev just straight up, like, no injury. I don't want to see Hopkins hurt. I want to see, like, career ending, like, level him, put him out, retire his ass. That's just what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see. Well, I think this is one of those fights where, you know, like Canelo Lara, we were kind of like, oh, I really want to see a definitive result. You know, I want somebody to win, and we didn't really get that. I mean, it was probably more of Canelo's type of fight, and I think he came out of it pretty well. But it was still kind of a controversial, you know, close decision. It could have gone either way. Here, I don't think it's, you know, here I think it's like any type of most controversial decision is a win for Hopkins. You know, I think Kovalev needs to win either decisively, you know, 12 rounds just beating or, you know, some kind of a knockout.
Yeah.
That's kind of the stakes when you're, you know, you're fighting a 49-year-old guy and you're in your prime and you're 28 years old or with 23 knockouts and 25 fights. You know, you have to, you know. I think this is a huge opportunity for him. You know, he's got to take advantage.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, if he freezes up in the moment, like you said, I mean, now because for Hopkins, this is routine, and that's the one thing that he has a huge edge, you know, and I think the whole crowd is going to be behind Hopkins. I mean, we all love Kovalev. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I feel like there's probably going to be a pro Hopkins because he just has a way of winning the crowd. You know, I mean, he's always mugging to the crowd. How can you not root for a 50-year-old guy in this type of a fight, you know? So I think it's going to be hard. I mean, when the fight starts, I might root for Hopkins. I think visually it's going to be hard to root for Hopkins, you know, root against Hopkins, just seeing this young guy coming out there and he's trying to take this old guy's head off, you know? So I think he's going to have factors, you know, he's going to have a lot of factors kind of working for him, but I just think Kovalev can change all of that if he just sticks with what he's been doing and doesn't treat Hopkins much differently than he's treated some other fighters, you know, because it's what always astounds me about Hopkins and Mayweather. You know, they've been so good defensively, but neither one of them has really been a, you know, big knockout power puncher. They're both kind of selective in their puncher, in, you know, with their punching, and they're both very accurate, you know, but a lot of times it is kind of more one punch at a time rather than combinations. And it just amazes me that they fight these kind of more active, aggressive fighters who are known for their output, you know, and guys who even have a little bit of power, and they get those guys to just freeze up. when you would think, like, these guys aren't knockout. Like, Mayweather and Hopkins, they're probably not going to knock you out. They're probably not really going to hurt you that badly. Like, your best chance is to just go after them and kind of give them all you've got and pressure them. And instead, they let those guys just dictate the pace, you know? And I guess it's just great boxers and great, you know, great defensive technicians.
Yeah.
But
I don't see
Kovalev,
you know,
falling in that trap, man. You look at Kovalev and you're just like, that dude's not going to get rattled. I mean, Pavlik, you could kind of understand where how Pavlik might, you know, psychologically maybe wasn't like the toughest dude, and you know.
And I think that you have a really good point too. Also, if you look at the history of it, I mean, look at guys who stepped forward and basically threw with guys like, you know, Hopkins, for instance. I mean, I don't want to like take it back to fucking like 94 and shit, but even in that first Segundo Mercado fight where he went down a couple times, you know, that's basically all Mercado did was just step with him and throw, and it hurt Hopkins and put him down a few times. But, you know, even just going to the Pascal fight, that's all Pascal did was pretty much just step with him and throw. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that's super easy and anybody could do it, but that's also the type of style that Kovalev usually employs. And also, you know, Castillo versus Mayweather, he did the same thing, stepping with Floyd and throwing and not being afraid of what's coming back. I mean, again, this is not easy, and not every fighter can do that, but that does seem to be like the type of fighter that Kovalev often is. So I think that there is a good chance, you know, and like I said, he should be expected to win probably.
Well, and I think Pascal was having a lot of success when he was more active in those rounds, and there were a lot of rounds in those fights. I don't know if people remember where Pascal just looked like he was just gassed. Like he wasn't doing it. He looked tired, you know, and he's fighting a guy 20 years older than him. It looked like he was just totally running out of steam. And, you know, he let Hopkins win so many of those, like, closer rounds. So I don't know. I mean, these guys do have kind of a mystique, and they have a way of just, you know, making their opponent play right into their hands. And I guess we'll see if he can do that with a guy like Kovalev. I mean, I think it's amazing and another testament, you know. Where do you stand on the whole, like, hypothetical, you know, everyone's always kind of throwing out, like, where does Hopkins rank when you compare him to guys like Mayweather, Pacquiao, Roy Jones, you know, all time?
Like, when you start doing the who's the best fighter of the last 28 and a half years thing, like, when you start doing that, you mean? I mean,
yeah.
I think that Bernard Hopkins, like, in some of these cases, it's like splitting hairs, dude. I'm really, like, not a list guy, and I don't like doing rankings just because there's two. When you start getting to a certain point, it's so, like, the differences are fairly minute and really tough to quantify, and I don't really like doing that. But if I were to kind of put, like, a number on it or put a, you know, a name or whatever, I would have to say that I personally feel like Bernard Hopkins' accomplishments have been more impressive over the last like 20 to 25 years than Floyd Mayweather, probably Roy Jones. And I'd say he's, if not at the top, really, really close to the top. If you're doing like 25 years, maybe even a little more, then like guys like Pernell Whitaker start creeping in there, and then it gets pretty difficult. But you know, if we're talking about, like, you know, this generation or whatever, I think Hopkins is pretty tough to beat for that top slot, to be honest. And that's
I guess it's not even really liking Hopkins
in the last, like, 8 years.
Well, it's a classic example of, like, why making lists and all that is so subjective and so silly to argue over. You know, I mean, it's fun. It's a great conversational fodder. But because, you know, in my mind, I mean, there's no question that at their very best, at the same weight, Roy Jones Jr. beats Bernard Hopkins. You know, I don't think we saw that because I think Hopkins was still a few years away from, you know, his best. I also think Jones probably was still, you know, a little bit before his true prime when they fought the first time. But, you know, I just think at their very best, I think Jones is better. But there's no question Hopkins, you know, what he's accomplished, his resume, the actual wins he has on paper.
Yeah, exactly.
I think probably at this point outweigh what Jones did. Although I do think Jones is a little bit almost underrated now because of what happened at the end of his career, which I think is in some ways kind of unfair because it just speaks to all the total randomness of boxing and how, you know, it's like if Jones, everyone always says, is Jones retired after the Ruiz fight and basically is undefeated, has one disqualification loss avenged in the, you know, first round, and does have some big wins. I mean, James Toney, arguably probably the best pound-for-pound guy that any of those fighters has a win over. I mean, it's up there with, you know, Hopkins over Trinidad or Pacquiao over Barrera. But, you know, I mean, that's one of the best wins of any fighter in the last 25 years. So it just, these things are so subjective. And, yeah, how do you really rate
yeah.
it? But I think that when people look at it, I mean, all of these things, you know, for me, it's just the fact that Hopkins took the fight speaks so much. I mean, he's taking a tougher opponent than the two guys, the two kind of flag bearers of the sport, you know, the top pay-per-view guys, Pacquiao and Mayweather. Mayweather's fighting Maidana, who we love, but, you know, hadn't really ever considered him to be kind of an elite fighter, anyone, a guy with the type of skills that would be able to compete with, you know, a pound-for-pound guy. And, you know, Pacquiao's fighting Algieri, who has one notable win, which was pretty damn controversial, in my opinion. You know, and I know Kovalev hasn't
totally.
You know, accomplished that much, but it's the way that he's been winning. And, you know, he hasn't been beating total scrubs. I mean, he's got Cleverly, Campillo. They're good fighters. I mean, they're top 10 guys at 175 pounds. And he's destroying them, blowing them away. You know, and you just think about a guy like Hopkins, you know, at that age, it, you know, to just say, fuck it, I'm fighting that guy. I'm fighting the guy that no one else wants a piece of. The guy who's in his prime, Adonis Stevenson, who in that division, doesn't want anything to do with Kovalev. And Hopkins is taking the fight. So I just think it is a testament to his greatness. You know, and that, to me, that's a part of being a great fighter, just as much as what actually happens in the ring or what, you know, I do think you have to get credit for your, you know, strength of schedule or whatever. That's why I think Oscar is kind of underrated too, because you think about all the big fights he took, all those guys. I mean, yeah, he has a few losses. They're also like the best fighters in the sport in their prime.
And that's exactly why I would go for, generally speaking, a guy with a resume like Hopkins over a Floyd Mayweather. For that specific reason, and I'm not going to like start marching around and calling Floyd Mayweather a duck or a chicken or any of that type of shit, but there were challenges around that he could have taken and didn't. Was it understandable that he didn't? Yeah, in a lot of cases, totally. If you look at, you know, especially, you know, Hopkins, for instance, or going back farther, et cetera, to all those, you know, fucking history guys that I like to, you know, quote about. These are guys that would have moved up to middleweight and been like, Golovkin, fucking A, dude, let's go. You know, like, these are the type of challenges that we're talking about. And Bernard Hopkins took more of those type of challenges than Floyd Mayweather. So, you know, that would be why I lean in that direction myself. But, yeah, point is, Bernard Hopkins is a really great fighter. There's no disputing that. So we'll have to see what comes about this weekend. But, I mean, I'm actually, this is not a super high caliber, you know, undercard fight by any means, but I think it's interesting and we don't have to get into it for too long, but you're going to be there. So you'll be able to report on every little punch landed on Twitter.
Exactly.
It's going to be Saddam Ali versus, what's that? Go ahead.
No, nothing.
Well, if you had a joke, dude, spill it.
No, I didn't. I lost it.
Well, I was just going to say that Saddam Ali versus Luis Carlos Abregu, which we have seen before. But, I mean, Saddam Ali, Olympic kid, you know, I think that I've read more press about him this week. And almost every single, you know, quote-unquote objective article I've read about Saddam Ali has been like, why isn't he a champion yet? Why doesn't he have a belt yet? Et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean,
yeah.
He's 26. It's not like he's old, but I've read more press about that than anything else. But this is a pretty risky fight. What do you think?
I think so because, you know, I mean, I hadn't even really heard much about Ali in a couple of years. You know, like he was a real hot prospect like 2 or 3 years ago, and I saw him fight a couple times, and I think he wasn't promoted by one of the major promoters, and he, you know, just wasn't getting that kind of like next level step up fight to get onto one of the networks. And I don't really know what he's been up to. I mean, I know he's talented, but yeah, Bregu's a legit dude. I mean, he's not by no means invincible, but he's just the fact that he's been in the ring with guys, you know, Tim Bradley and who is that other prospect that he had knocked out? Like,
Thomas DeLorme.
DeLorme. Yeah. Who's a skill, DeLorme,
and he also
skilled
and he
guy.
Beat, and he beat Decury, Antonin Decury.
Yeah, that's right.
That was
Martinez card.
I think that was, yeah. I think that it, I don't remember if that was shown or not, but or at least live. I don't remember if it was shown live.
I think
but
they showed highlights.
Like
they were going to show it, and then they ended up with highlights because the whole thing got
that's
like,
right,
scheduled.
Yeah. Because we were all like, yeah, that's going to be on the undercard. That should be awesome. And then it wound up like there was bad weather or some shit, so they had to like shift around anyway. But yeah,
it's a huge step up. I mean, it just seems like, you know, if Bautista has any type of vulnerability, you know, Abreu has the power to really punish him for it, and you know, and the fight. So I'm intrigued by it. You know, you think going in it'll be kind of a boxer puncher type of matchup?
Yeah, and well, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm not trying to be down on the kid because he's only 26 and he's got like 20 fights or something. But you know, Saddam Ali, he hasn't been overly impressive. And they're looking at his resume. I mean, basically, if you go over and look at his resume, and I pulled it up, of course, because I'm like, I don't know who the fuck has he fought. And I look and I'm like, all right, who are these? Like, are there any names that I automatically recognize? And I was like, oh, Michael Clark. Yeah, Michael Clark was that dude who, like, you know, was barely a fringe contender in the early 2000s, fought, like, Vivian Harris and, you know, was getting destroyed by dudes back then. Wait, what? And that's, like, the most recognizable name that I see on his resume. And then, you know, he jumps right into with a guy like Abreu who can punch, who's kind of a crafty type dude. You know, he's kind of tagged along on this Argentine sensation that we're, you know, currently in the midst of with Matisse and Maidana and formerly Martinez. But, you know, he's not a bad fighter. So seeing Saddam Ali go right into this, I don't know. I mean, that's a bit of a gamble. So I'm kind of wondering what exactly the deal is. Either they have a lot of confidence in this kid or they're, like, cashing him out.
It's tough to say. I mean, it's a big, big opportunity for him. Because, you know, Abreu's stock is really high right now, so it would be a big win for him and kind of announce himself as, you know, contender in the division. But, yeah, it's a big jump. I mean, we saw that this kind of a poor man's, you know, with the Lomachenko, Gary Russell, where a guy just doesn't have that type of experience. I mean, Russell is skilled as hell. Russell's probably more talented than Ali. But, you know, you haven't had that experience. You jump up that big in competition. You're fighting a guy who, you know, can take your punches and knows how to box a little bit, has some power. Now, I'm not comparing, you know, Lomachenko and Abreu are completely different, obviously, but it's the same concept. You know, you're putting a prospect who's really only fought, you know, overmatched kind of journeyman types in with a, you know, legitimate guy. And unless that prospect is really, you know, really, really skilled, he's going to have a tough time.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I don't know that we've seen that much skill from Ali at this point. So, you know, it's an intriguing fight anyway, because we're going to find some answers. At least I would imagine we should. So I don't know. The rest of the card seems to be littered with, you know, Eastern European talent. There's two Vyacheslavs fighting. So, you know, it should be a pretty fun card anyway. And I'm guessing there's going to be a pretty decent ethnic contingent there supporting a lot of these guys. But in any event, before we go and we wrap this shit up, I was just going to mention quickly, there are two other fights going on this weekend that are overseas, but I wanted to mention one was Felix Sturm versus Robert Stieglitz. And I don't know, I'm not super, you know, duper interested in that, and I don't really give a shit about catching it live, but anyway, worth mentioning. But the second one that I wanted to mention was your boy Artie Spielka is fighting Tomasz Adamek in Poland.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I'm sure there'll be like a stream somewhere. I'm not going to watch that live either, but I'm definitely going to go back and watch it. And I definitely want to know if, you know, is Spielka really going to wear that little dilly to the weigh-in again? Because we need some footage of that, like ASAP.
They need to allow him to wear that in the ring.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Use it as a weapon. Fuck, why not? But that's, you know, Adamek is basically on the retirement tour.
I think that's a great fight. I think that's a
great
fight, you know. I mean,
it totally
is. Because Adamek has definitely slowed down a bit, and there's no question he's more skilled and, overall better and much more experienced than Spielka. And Spielka is pretty limited. But, you know, Spielka can punch, and he's kind of a tough dude. You know, he's got off the deck a couple times. And, you know, Adamek doesn't have that much pop at heavyweight, so I don't know. I think it's a really interesting fight. I could actually see Spielka pulling an upset there.
Yeah, and that's, and that's actually probably going to be, I have absolutely no idea what time it's going to be played, but my guess is that if it's live, it's going to be something like, you know, fucking like 4 a.m. or something like that here. And so I'm not going to be watching that live, but regardless, I definitely want to check it out afterwards. I'm going to try to stay away from the results because I think that's a pretty evenly matched fight at this point. Adamek, not a very big heavyweight in general. You know, Spielka is not super skilled and can be hit. So that has kind of, I'd have to say, Polish war written all over it, dude. Just saying.
Yeah, we just need Andrew Glada to get in there and punch somebody in the nuts.
Yeah, dude. Our buddy Andy. Our homie.
Andy Glada.
Yeah, Andy.
I wonder if Fonsfaro will go back. Do you think Fonsfaro will fly back to be at ringside for that?
Dude, he's probably treated like a god there. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That should probably
he may be
true.
The best,
like,
pound for pound, the best Polish fighter in the world these days, especially if Spielka beats Adamek.
Yeah, I don't
know,
man. I
gotta update my pound for pound Polish rankings.
Yeah, well, I'm still working on my Bulgarian one, so I haven't gotten there yet. Working my way over. We'll see.
Those are tough. Is your boy Karol Murat the Bulgarian? Is he Turkish?
No, the jury's still out. We're waiting for
DNA
testing results.
Yeah, we need to figure that out so we can, you know, amend our list.
I don't know if you watched that fight, but, you know, after that Hopkins fight, I'd have to say that Murat's got a little alien in him.
Yeah, he does. And he got bitch slapped by Smoker, which is added insult to injury.
Yeah, he straight up got slapped by Spock, dude. Not everybody can say they got slapped by Smoker and lived. So, you know, it's kind of impressive, I have to say.
Yeah, most of the time Smoker's wearing rubber gloves slapping somebody. It's not in the ring. It's, you know, Gimp basement.
Oh, man. And you know what? He's got to say, I have to say that, you know, if we're compiling like a, maybe for the next show we need to compile one, but if we're doing like a top 6 creepiest fucking mustaches in boxing, I'm going to go Victor Conti as number 1, but Smoger's got to be 2 or 3.
It's up there.
It's up there. It is up there.
Yeah.
Well, let's bring the show to a close there, Foley, and we'll hop on out of here, and we're going to pray. We're going to sacrifice some type of farm animal that Kovalev does a decapitation this weekend. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sneaking into Hopkins' locker room and maybe just putting a little, like, something to give him diarrhea into his water bottle just to be safe.
Pull, like, a... You need to pull a Revenge of the Nerds move and put some of the jock itch powder in his jock strap. That shit would be classic, too. Plus, you'd get close to Bernard Hopkins' jock. So, I mean, this is win-win right here. I'm just saying.
Win-win-win-win.
Yeah, win-win. All right, well, let's bring this shit to a close. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in live. I don't know. We'll see what the interest is here. We have no idea. I'll check later. But thank you, anyway, for tuning in live. And, James, thanks for being my boo today, my bae.
Thanks, man. I'll talk to you on Tuesday with the recap.
Hell yeah, dude. Well, have fun this weekend and take it easy there, partner.
I will.
All right, everybody. Thanks again, and we'll see everybody next week. Take it easy.